Blog Talk Radio.
King Street, DC Metropolitan News and Real Estate Information.
Audience, and welcome to the King Street. I'm your host, King, and I'm joined by my co-host, Mr. Smith. How you doing today, Mr. Smith?
Hey, doing great, King. Glad to be here. Andre Smith, real estatepreneur. Happy to be here and talk one of my favorite subjects, building wealth through real estate.
Absolutely. And as we like to get every show started, I want to get started with saying gratitude moment, what I'm grateful for. I'm grateful for my life, for my health, for my ability to see, hear, walk, talk, stand, breathe, and have a sound mind. I'm grateful for another 24 hours to pursue my purpose in life. I'm grateful for the love and support from all my friends and family members. And one other thing I also realized I'm very grateful for, I got a chance to see my mom for Mother's Day, and I'm grateful for having a mom that's still in her 80s, and she still has her mental faculties. She wanted to make dinner, you know, still serving and giving and loving. So I realized that's such a blessing to still have her around for that, and I'm thankful for that. So that's my gratitude moment. How about yourself, Mr. Smith? What are you grateful for this morning or this afternoon?
Yeah, so in the same lines, King, I want to dedicate this show to my great aunt, Cecilia Yates. I'm extremely grateful for her. Thankful for her, that God had shared us with her, and I have shared us with her. She is 101 years old. We celebrated her 101st birthday, February the 12th. And so she's in her sound mind. She's healthy. She had signs of the corona, but even that couldn't slow her down. So 15 days later, she then tested negative, right? So no symptoms, never had any symptoms, but tested positive. So it's just a tribute to her resilience and to God's grace. But we're just so appreciative of her and her and what she means to our family. And every opportunity we get, we celebrate her. So, in the vein of Mother's Day and talking about legacies, she is definitely a pillar in our family.
Absolutely, brother. Absolutely. That's definitely something to celebrate. You know, I don't think we do that enough and honor our elders in the manner in which we should, which was always our culture, you know, before we came over here and allow ourselves to get assimilated into American culture that doesn't value elderly. It puts folks in elderly homes, assisted living homes without thinking about them. So I think that's powerful and definitely a blessing to have. An elder lived to be 100 years old. I would love to be able to talk to her to learn to hear the kind of stories she can share as far as what she's been able to see through her whole 100 years of being here on this planet.
Yeah, no, I mean, every time we get, you know, it's kind of funny because she's very bashful as it relates to cameras. And so she's never been one to take a lot of pictures and always shy away from pictures. And that was the running joke of the family is no one could get her to take a picture. And as she started getting older, I told my wife that I just want to be intentional in spending more time with her and really understanding her and getting wisdom from her. And so I made a commitment to go and see her on a regular basis. And as we started talking and as she started sharing, slowly but surely, each time I visit, I was able to take a picture. Each time I visit, I was able to get another story and get insight into another thing. And so when I started sharing it with some family members, they're like, she took pictures? She told you what? She never talks about that. Well, she never shared that with me. And so it just goes back to your point in that just celebrating them, right? Just showing up to say, hey, I appreciate you. Hey, I love you. I don't need anything. I don't want anything. I just want to sit with you and listen. And so often we're in the mode in this busy life that we have. We want to talk and we want to share and we want to divulge. But oftentimes when you're around wisdom, you just need to just be quiet and listen.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Those are wise words there. Yeah, but absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. So as we get into our show, brother, let's go ahead and get started with our mortgage moment, our mortgage minute. Market.
Yeah,
minute.
So.
My apologies.
No, you're good. So the market minute this week is actually the market is extremely healthy. And so what we did was we pulled information from economists and people around the Beltway. And what we learned is that April was a phenomenal month. And kind of just kind of stepping back is February was actually record month, about 13% growth in the real estate market as a whole, particularly in the Washington-Baltimore region. So it was actually one of the strongest Februarys on record. So we was up 13%. And I think what we're finding is we're still riding that wave that was created early on in the first quarter. And surprisingly, in looking at April's numbers, I was slightly surprised to learn that there hasn't been a lot of drop-off, that it's still a very healthy market. Buyers are buying, sellers are selling. And more importantly than that, they're getting about 94% of the list price. So they're not having
really?
To, they're not having to have fire sales as of yet. So that's extremely encouraging.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Okay. All right. Well, you know, one of the things that, around that, I still think that now is a great time to buy real estate. My mindset is always a great time to buy real estate. Depends on what you're paying for it, obviously. But I think it's a great time to buy real estate just because of the fact that, as you just laid out, the market conditions, as well as there's going to be so many people selling real estate just because of the fact is it's going to become burdensome to them. And I'm a person who believes that right now is where we really want to begin to start developing housing that fits this new norm that we're going to be getting into, which is, you know, people are going to be spending 60 to 70% minimum time at home, where they may have been spending only 30%, 40% of their time at home in the past, where you just get home from a long day's work, have dinner with your family, then you're going to sleep, and then you're out working and grinding constantly. I think the new norm is going to be, you know, even when they open the country back up, it's not going to open up to the point where it's just going to be a normal how it was prior to the COVID-19. You know, so it's still going to be folks still going to be reluctant to go out. We're still going to be in at least a 2-month phase of testing, not just physical testing with the, you know, to see if you got the virus or not, but just testing to get feedback to see whether or not have more people contracted the virus as a result of them, you know, opening the market back up. And if it does, then that's going to make it shut it down for even a much more longer period of time. So we're going to have to go through 2 months of really uncertainty to really get a feeling of that we have this new normal established. So my point of saying all that is I think it's going to be a time where, as we talk about today's topic of building wealth through real estate, that thinking differently about the redevelopment of homes instead of just building a house for a family. And that's fine, folks who have that model. But my model is going to be specifically toward building toward an entrepreneur, building for that person who does not need a living room or a dining room, but needs a house that's more conducive to that lifestyle of being home pretty much most of their day. So you might have a library. You might have an area where you're working out. You may have an office. And really building, you know, real estate for that. And that's what I really love about Baltimore City, because there's so many properties here in Baltimore City. And if you're creative and you think outside of the box, you can do some creative things with these properties here in Baltimore City.
Yeah, no, King, so that's a great point. And let me just give you some numbers to kind of back up what you're saying. And this ties into that marketing moment that we just had. So I did kind of speak a little quickly because we are getting a little less than list price, which is great because, I mean, it depends on what side of the equation you're on. Because if you're an investor and you're looking for buying opportunities, this data is going to flush out why you should be getting active in the market. So in terms of lists, in April of 2020, there was 892 houses listed in Baltimore City. And so what that means in terms of volume is about $202,193,303 worth of listed volume real estate in Baltimore just in the month. And so that listed medium sales price was about $95,000, so $195,000. So to be exact, it was $195,250 was the average medium list price. And so currently in April, at the end of April, we had 732 transactions that was pending. So what that means then on the sales side, we actually have a sales volume of 682. So 682 units actually sold in April in Baltimore City. Now here's where I say the opportunity is. I mentioned to you earlier that the list medium price was $195,000 and the sold volume price is $137,475. So you can see on averages that's roughly about $55,000 off of the list price in terms of the average sales. So the average sold medium is actually 175, right? But
right.
Here's one thing to keep in mind. The average days on the market is 52. So we're seeing a slight tick up in terms of days on the market, which, again, creates buying opportunities for investors. So with this information, now you're armed because when you see a property go north of 60 days, go north of 70 days, north of 80 days, now you know that motivated seller is kind of looking to say, hey, it might be time for a price adjustment, or it might be time for a rent with the option to buy. It might be time for providing creative financing, right, for that buyer, that investor. So these numbers are favorable as it relates to investors because the volume is there, the market is healthy, there's transactions that are happening, but more importantly, they're selling for less than list price, which creates the buying opportunity.
Oh, that's excellent information. Thank you for sharing that. And, you know, and that's kind of what I like to say as a real estate investor, as a conscious investor, more specifically, data-driven investing. When you look at that data, and that data guides your decisions, because if you understand the facts as far as what the average list price is, days on the market, what the average selling price is, then you can be better armed. And when you write your offer, you're not writing an offer just to take advantage of somebody by offering them something just extremely low because you are trying to win and you want them to lose, but you're offering that win-win scenario, and you can put that and help that property owner see that here's why my offer is what it is, and this is the most I can actually pay for it. And of course, I'm into real estate for a profit. I'm not into real estate just to give you money and I take a loss, you know. And once that understanding is met, and you back that up with data, I think you can get into those win-win conversations. And you know, real estate has been a great vehicle for me with regards to helping me get businesses started. I've been able to buy real estate. You know, I tell folks, one of the great things I love about real estate as an investment vehicle compared to stocks, bonds, diamonds, gold, all those are, you know, or other commodities, those are good investments as well if you know that game. But the best part about real estate comparison is this. If you want to buy $100 worth of gold or $100,000 worth of gold, you typically have to have $100,000. If you want to buy $100,000 worth of commodities or stock, you know, you got to have at least 50%, and depending on the broker and the trader, they're going to still do some kind of equity leveraging, but you still going to be bringing in majority of that cash to what you're buying. Whereas real estate, if you're a homeowner, you know, you can buy an asset and you only have to come down with 3.5% down, and the bank is going to lend you 96.5% of the rest of the money, you know, as a home buyer. As an investor, you can probably get an 20% down, 80% loan. You know, so it's the only vehicle I know that you can have a higher leverage based on what your investment is to what you could potentially get out of it. You know, so that's why I tell folks that. And then it's a tangible asset that you can see. You can drive by and you can see it every day, as opposed to just trusting the market and hoping that the market doesn't go this way and you don't really understand economics and understand how market trends and wars across seas and different presidents being, governors being elected and so forth throughout the country. And upcoming, we have another presidential election, how that's going to impact the stocks and bonds and everything. That has a play in real estate, but not significantly as, it's not as volatile as those markets may be. It's my point I'm making.
No, it's a great point. And, I mean, if you just follow the logic of Warren Buffett, which, you know, recent history has shared that he's been one of the greatest investors and leveragers as it relates to the market. But what little the people know is he's also a big player in real estate. And so
yes.
And what Warren Buffett understands is it's all about leverage, right? So the reason why you're going to be able to get a loan on a house with only putting 3% down is because the lender understands if he has to take that asset, then he can leverage that, right? And so Warren Buffett always says, and you were making the distinction between investing in stocks and investing in real estate, and you said that most people's learning curve is a lot steeper with investments, and I agree with that 100%. But what Warren Buffett says is, he says, invest in what you know. So if you
yeah.
buy Tide laundry detergent and Tide laundry detergent works for you and your family, then you should consider investing in Tide because you know Tide, you trust Tide, you are investing in a company, so you're also buying the products that you're investing in. And so I equate that to real estate, is that everyone who's listening to us on this planet knows something about housing. They either lived in a house, they've rented a house, they've bought a house, they've sold a house. So how a house is something that's familiar to them. Now, they probably haven't always thought about a house in terms of an asset. But I would also challenge you that everybody that buys Tide detergent hasn't thought about Tide detergent as it relates to investing. They
right.
know Tide detergent as something that cleans their clothes. So I'm saying
correct.
That to say is, if you follow Warren Buffett's logic to investing, then it's a natural progression. It's an organic progression to go from housing, something you're familiar with, something that you currently in one way or another is involved in, whether as an owner or a renter, and then making the step to say, okay, because I know about this and I know there's a need for this because I actually have a need for it, hey, maybe I can provide this for other people, right? And that's how Warren Buffett invests. So most of his investments, he start off with, you know, as a consumer, from the consumer perspective. What is the buying experience? What is this product like? How is this product, what is this something that I would want to purchase myself and use prior to me investing, right? Does it make sense?
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, and to that point, you know, I want to bring in our guest who, again, in honoring a woman on Mother's Day, or belated Mother's Day, recently had her on my show, The Conscious Capitalist, to talk about her heroism that she's been able to do in living in Baltimore City. And I want to welcome her to this day's show because the fact that as we talk about building wealth through real estate, she's our first case study to illustrate the fact that even as a home buyer, if you understand the process, you go through the education, that, and even in areas where people talk so bad about Baltimore City, particularly as a homeowner or home buyer, that you can still make money, you can still purchase the correct way, and you can still have a nice lifestyle. So without any further ado, I want to welcome to the King Street Show, Najema Yassin. How you doing this morning? This afternoon, I keep saying I'm stuck in this morning mode for some reason. How you doing this afternoon, Najema? Hello, Najema, can you hear us? Maybe having a technical difficulty. Let me work on some things and bring Najema back in to our show. Now, Juman, can you hear us?
I can hear you.
Okay, great. How are you doing this afternoon?
Very well. How are you?
Doing great. Doing great. And thank you for calling into the show, because we wanted to highlight your story as a case study of how you were able to begin to build wealth through real estate. And so we're going to ask you a few questions about, you know, you to set the context so our listening audience, as well as my co-host, Mr. Smith, can get an understanding about how you purchased correctly and how you were able to leverage that.
Okay.
So let's start with, now, you grew up or lived predominantly in East or West Baltimore?
West Baltimore.
Okay, so you purchased your property in West Baltimore, correct?
Yes.
Now, when you purchased your property, did you have any home buying experience? Anyone that helped you make sure you bought the right, brought the house in the correct process? Or let's talk a little bit about that process that you went through.
No, I didn't have anyone to help me at the time. I did have a realtor, but I looked for a house for 9 months, which is a long time to look for a house. But because of a program that I ended up getting into, the realtor that I had was not able to help me with the buying process with that program.
Okay. Now, was this realtor a friend of yours, or this realtor you met through a referral? How did you meet this realtor?
When I started looking to purchase a home, I think someone referred this realtor to me, and I gave her a call, and we started. I, you know, told her what I was looking for, and we started looking, and. But when I ended up finding the house that I bought, she wasn't able, because it was under a certain program, she wasn't able to sell that house to me.
Okay. Now, you don't have to mention the realtor's name, because my question is not to pretty much put her on or say anything disparaging against her, but just to get a little clarity as far as what did you think about prior to getting into that program, the realtor's assistance for you? Did you find that the realtor was very helpful with the process? Did they explain to you the home buying process? What was your thoughts on that experience with the realtor?
I would say no. She didn't give me a lot of information. I ended up finding out information, a lot of things on my own. She was basically trying to sell me a house. And being a first-time homeowner, I started looking up information so that I found out living in Baltimore, you could do the, I think it was, I'm trying to remember what it was called, live to work, that's what it was called. And so I looked into that program, and then a couple other things that were available at the time, and ended up seeing a home in the first area that I purchased, and it was a program that would assist you with closing costs and help you with not just closing costs, but also with the classes, so that you would be so that you would better understand what you were doing.
Right.
So
right.
That's what I did. But I started looking up information myself, because I just didn't want to just buy a house. I needed information. I needed to know what to look for when I'm looking at a house. And so that's what I did.
And do you remember, I'm sure you do, what was the time frame as far as how many years ago did you buy your first house?
It was in 2005.
Okay, 2005. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And would you say that, I know you said it took you 9 months, but would the overall experience something that you feel is, you're glad you went through it so that you learned it, or would you say that it was a painful experience that you wouldn't want to go through that again? How would you kind of rate that experience?
No, it wasn't painful at all. I learned a lot from it, especially in going in. I can't tell you how many houses I looked at, but I learned a lot by looking at the homes, and I learned what I didn't want. That was one of the things I learned, what I did not want. I was single at the time, and I didn't need a fixer-upper. I needed something already that I could just move into. So I learned a lot, but it was not, definitely wasn't a painful experience. It was an excellent experience.
Hmm. Now, as a realtor, Mrs. Smith, what do you think about some of the things she shared so far?
No, I think, I'm glad that in the end it worked out. She found the right house with the right program, because oftentimes the buyer's assistance programs are ones that's needed. But as she said, her realtor is probably, you know, it's probably, you know, similar to a lot of other situations where the programs are very specific. And if you can have a realtor, if you can, you know, oftentimes the program, it has to be someone that's certified through them. Or, you know, they have their own, you know, people within their program, so that's not unusual. But I like what she was saying, is that she didn't just rely on the information she was receiving, that she wanted to learn, she wanted to be active, she wanted to be part of the process. And I think that's probably why, you know, the story ended well, regardless of the other moving pieces. You know, statistics show us that about 92% of people who purchase a house start the process online. And so that's just kind of where we are right now as a country, is that there's so much information that you can get online that there is value in having someone to disseminate that information, right? So I can go online and read about a coronary operation, but it doesn't make me qualified to do that operation on myself. So it's always great mm-hmm. to have the information, but I think it's helpful if you can have the information and have a professional that can dissect that information for you so that you can leverage it, so you can get the maximum benefit out of the information.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I liken it to changing the oil in a car. Like, you know, I remember somebody used to tell me when I was young that, you know, coming from St. Louis and the neighborhood I grew up in, everybody was a do-it-yourself type of person. And so the rites of passage was, when you first got your car, you don't take your car to get the oil changed from some mechanic. You learn how to change your oil yourself. You know, so I learned how to change my oil and went through the process of buying oil and buying the pan and buying the filter and then having to jack the car up and go through all that process. And I realized as I got older that that wasn't the best use of my time. But the knowledge of understanding what was required to change the oil helped me better appreciate the mechanic's time. So when a mechanic told me they're going to charge me $60 for the oil change, I can assess whether or not that was a good deal or not, because I had at least – I didn't have the mechanic's experience overall, but I had an understanding of what I needed for the mechanic to do. And so we can dialogue at a level where I can – better assess his value that they were offering to me. And I think that's the same thing with real estate. You can do some research online, get some data, get some facts, and get enough information to ask intelligent questions of your real estate professional.
Yeah, you're right. I'm dating myself. There used to be a commercial. There was a suit company. I don't even think they're in business any longer. The suit company was called Sims, S-I-M-S. And the owner was always part of the commercials. And you would see a gentleman leafing through the racks of suits. And he didn't quite know what he was looking for. And at the end of the commercial, the the punchline was, an educated consumer is our best customer. So what he was saying is, we're here to help, we're here to assist, but if you're educated, you're going to make our job a lot easier because you'll have a context for what the and you're also going to see how valuable we are if you're educated before you come through the door. Now, we'll educate you if we have to, but if you're an educated consumer, you are our best customer.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Now, Juma, you did some things, and that's what I wanted to kind of be more specific and talk about some of the data around your home purchase, if you wouldn't mind sharing. So you say it took you 9 months to purchase your property. What were some of the key things you were looking for?
I wanted in the home, you mean?
Yes.
I wanted a front yard so I could put some flowers in. I wanted a backyard. I wanted the home to be updated. Like I said, I didn't want to do any work in the house. I wanted central air. I wanted the I did not want radiator heat. I wanted gas heat. Even though radiator heat to me is still the best, but I didn't want that. I didn't want to buy oil. Let me see what else. I wanted 3 bedrooms, and I just wanted a basic, nice home in a nice neighborhood is what
and
I
so
was looking for. The neighborhood was important as well.
And you were familiar with the neighborhood that you purchased your house prior to purchasing the house?
I really wasn't. I was not familiar with the neighborhood, but what happened is they were all brand new homes that were being built there. And so the program that I was in brought all of the, let me see, it was 10 homes right in that area that were being built. So they brought all of the prospective homeowners together and so that we could all meet. And it just seemed like it was a nice group of people that were going to be moving into the neighborhood. And I think a few years before, they had, maybe not the same program, but they had built houses further up the street. So it looked like it was a pretty nice neighborhood, but I didn't know anything about it before. But after I chose the house I was looking for, I started stalking it. I stalked it. I was looking in the window every day. And at the time, they had a security person riding around so that they could keep the appliances in the house. And I remember him saying to me, "Miss, you can't keep looking in that window." I said, "Yes, I can, because this is going to be my home. I can look at it any time I want to." And I started bringing my daughters. I started bringing my friends. They were like, "You can't keep coming around here like this." So what happened, they ended up letting me come in. The workers let me come in. I said, "You're going to let me in my house?" And so they let me in so I could look at it, and I was just so excited. I was so excited. But
so
I didn't have to do anything because it was a brand new home.
Okay, so you claimed that. That's powerful. So now, what did you pay for the house?
I paid, I think it was about $80,000 for the house.
And this was a newly renovated 3-bedroom and how many baths?
It wasn't renovated. It was built up from the ground, brand new.
Oh, I'm sorry, brand new.
Oh, my gosh.
Right, yeah.
It was brand new.
Thank you for the clarification, because that's different.
Sure.
Thank you for the clarification.
Yeah.
So how many bathrooms did you have?
I had 2 bathrooms and a powder room.
And did it come with a finished basement as well?
No, the basement was not finished. But it was a huge basement. Really nice basement. The whole house was very nice. Very nice house.
And this is a row home, correct?
Yes. Yes, a row home.
So, again, listening audience, she paid $80,000 for a new home, 3 bedrooms, 2.5 baths. Now, mm-hmm. you ask yourself, just on those numbers, even in 2005, that sounds phenomenal, doesn't it, Mrs. Smith?
Absolutely. I mean, there's some cars that's more expensive than what you bought a house for. So having mm-hmm. a wealth conversation is, you know, that's leveraging because, you know, cars, they will depreciate the minute you drive them off the lot. So good for you. That was an excellent purchase.
And you were able to get down payment and closing cost assistance on top of the $80,000 purchase price, right?
Exactly. I came to the table with a small amount of money.
Wow.
Small amount.
That's great.
I was living in an apartment. No, I'm sorry. I was living in a house in South Baltimore, and the landlord I had at the time allowed me to stay in his house until my house was ready, and he didn't charge me the last month rent so that I could use that for part of my down payment. So I was, oh my gosh, that was a blessing.
Wow. Now, what was your mortgage payment on your new home?
It was about $600 a month.
And what was your rent payment prior to with that landlord that you spoke of?
$600.
So you were able to move into a new home basically for the same amount without having a larger debt load for yourself.
Right, exactly. And as a matter of fact, I wanted to, in looking, I wanted him to sell me the house that I was living in, but I couldn't afford that house. It was way out of my range.
And I see that's a key thing there. I'm glad you pointed it out. That understanding what your financial range is, or, you know, and that's one of the things that investors, I think, get into a mistake, as well as homeowners or home buyers, is not clearly understanding the deal all the way through, understanding the numbers all the way through, and making sure that they make a well-informed decision before they purchase it. So did you have to spend a lot of time negotiating on the price, or when you wrote your offer for $80,000, that was the offer that was accepted, or that was the offer that they presented to you, and you felt that that was good for you to pay 80? Did you try to do any negotiation?
No, I didn't, because of the program, that's what the house was selling for. You couldn't negotiate. This was the price that these homes were going for. If you understand what I'm saying, it was,
I do now.
In this program, this is it, and you're either going to move here or you're not.
Okay.
And I could afford that that price. That was right in my range.
And how much, now, you stayed there for how many years before you decided to go for your second property?
14 years.
14 years. Okay.
Yes.
Now, your second property, if you don't mind me asking, how much did you pay for that?
$267,000.
Okay. Now, and I want our listening audience to understand the difference there. $80,000 on the first house and $267,000 on the second house, but you had 14 years experience and you had some cash flow and equity to take into that, and some experience to take into that second house as well. And that's what I think that I want to point that out, because a lot of people don't understand or don't think that your starter house or your first house, look at it as it could be a starter house. It doesn't have to have everything you want, but it can have what's, you know, your needs. And then your second purchase, now you can move and make sure you get most of the things that you're looking for. So one of the other questions I wanted to ask you was that, now I know you didn't sell your first home, you're renting it out, and what are you renting it out for?
$1,500.
And see, there lies how you build wealth in real estate. Because I know for a fact that we're not going to disclose the address, but your house is definitely not worth $80,000. It's worth much more than $80,000 now. So not only have you gotten the chance to get appreciation, the difference between what you owe and what the market value, I mean, what you owe and the market value, but you also are getting cash flow on a monthly basis. And that is where the crux of this day's discussion is centered around how you build wealthy real estate. And with you being a homeowner who bought a house as a place to live, and you live in the house, but you're able to now move on to another property and then still benefit from that homeowner decision that you did. I think that's a phenomenal story.
Right. And I did have a deck put on the back of the house. So that, I think, helped me along with getting the amount of money that I wanted to get for rental.
Okay, excellent. Excellent. So, Mr. Smith, did you have any questions?
No, great job.
And
thank you.
Which is the reason why I wanted to have you on a call, because, see, that's where, you know, the vision of the Conscious Real Estate Investors Roundtable is to educate people on that's buying Baltimore now, that's buying in some of these neighborhoods that are not as maybe physically appealing based on the curb appeal, which is where you get your best deals. But you can find diamonds in these neighborhoods, particularly if you're going to buy the whole block, which is what we always advocate. Buy the block. Don't just buy one house on the block and hope the block turns. But get in a group like the Roundtable and listen to shows like we're talking about. Get that information. Do your research. Talk to folks who've been in the game for a while, homeowners as well as real estate professionals, and start to gather that information, but begin to start to think about how you can begin to build wealthy real estate. And like I said, what I love about real estate is you can live in it while you're actually generating wealth from it. And instead of you sitting there paying rent for another 14 years and paying that gentleman $600 a month, and right now, if you had decided never to buy that house and you stayed there for 14 years in the same rent situation that you were living in, you would not have improved your wealth situation at all as far as having real estate help you out with that. You had to be totally relied upon your other investment knowledge, such as stocks, bonds, other investment vehicles, trying to start a business, things of that nature. But just living in a house helped you, put you in a position where now you're getting about $900 a month approximately cash flow in the house, on the house that you lived in, and that provides a great story.
And if I could add, the one other thing is, you know, we're talking about wealth and we're talking about legacy. And I heard you say earlier that you brought your friends, you brought your family, but you also brought your daughters, right, to see the house that was being built. So, you know, I assume that they grew up there in that house?
No.
No, they were. No, they had already moved on.
No. Yes, they. That's a whole nother story, Mr. Smith.
Whole nother show. So my point here is, we're talking about legacy. And so there were some people who had their eyes on you, and they were able to see you go into this property, able to see you leverage it. But even what I think is a beautiful part of the story is, you know, you can now do the same thing for your tenant that the landlord did for you, that your landlord had you hold back on your last month's rent so that you can invest in your future. And now you've put yourself in the position where you're not only getting – where you're not only be able to leverage your original purchase, but now you can sow a seed into someone else to say, hey, I don't want you to be a renter forever. It's great that you're here. I'm glad that you're here. But what is your plan? Where would you like to be in the next 3 years, the next 5 years, and be able to give them some wise counsel in terms of credit and what you were able to do to put yourself in that position? And then repeat the cycle. So the next person that comes in to rent from you, 3 to 5 years, they should be out buying their house as well.
Exactly.
And the extra $900 that you're generating each month, and you're still getting the appreciation, you know, so when if you do decide to sell that house, then the difference between what you've paid down on the property, you know, what you owe and what you can sell it for, that's where the wealth is as well. And that's where, again, I can't illustrate enough that real estate is the best vehicle for our community to build wealth. You know, and one of the things that I find to be so shocking is I was reading an article the other day that was written in the Baltimore Sun. It talked about that home ownership for blacks have not improved. We're still at 42%. And that's exactly where we were when they passed the Fair Housing Act back in 1968. So typically, I mean, so we really haven't moved as a race toward owning more real estate. And I think that's one of the things that why we as a race kind of are struggling as a race is because we don't understand how to really leverage real estate the proper way and how to make sure that we benefit and build wealth through real estate investing. And that's why I wanted to have Najuma on the show to show that there's a lot of examples. It's not Najumas out there who've actually purchased the right way, who went through the education classes, who made sure that she understood that she stayed in the house for 14 years. And she said she added a deck. And you finished the basement of the house as well, correct? Or did you ever finish the basement?
No, I did not. I did not finish the basement. I did.
Okay. And but I think that your story is a great story that other people can learn and build from. So now, Mr. Smith, let me ask you, you have several stories, but what story can you share with us in particular of a house you were able to purchase, whether it was your own private residence first or an investment property that you were able to purchase and leverage to kind of put you on a pathway to start building wealth?
Yeah, no, sure. I mean, and I'll share because this is fresh. I have a client as we speak right now. I just got the notification this morning that our contract was ratified. And so this is a client who we started off with her a number of years ago, and she bought her first property. And she was so excited. And as a matter of fact, it's interesting we're having this conversation because she also had a down payment assistance program that she was using to purchase her first property. So she got below market interest rate, kind of got in, had a great situation. And she called me up 2 years ago. Well, I guess it's been about a year ago now, and said, hey, you know, I think I'm going to transition. You know, would you be able to manage the property for me? And I said, absolutely, because we were doing property management as well. And she said, you know, well, do you think it's a great time to sell? And for her, the community, the equity was growing. The community was, there was some great things that was happening. I said, hey, you know, if you can afford to hold out, you know, I would think about renting it for about 2 years, and then we'd have that conversation. So to make a long story short, to fast forward, is we just, she is now about to purchase her second house. She's still renting the one that we had talked about, her original purchase, in which we're managing for her, and now she's about to buy her second piece of property, which she was able to do without selling the first property because, as you mentioned earlier, she's getting positive cash flow on that. And so, you know, why do I mention that? Because, one, it's about leverage. So we need to think about real estate more like insurance policies than we think about real estate. It is an asset. And as we're able to leverage it, we can actually do things with it that can help free up and give us other options in other parts of our life, right? And whether we're talking about refinancing, selling it, cash flow, renting it, all those things are important. And the second common thread here is relationships. You know, as you start to work with people that's doing a great job and doing things well for you, you want to maintain those relationships and be able to draw upon that. So she was able to contact me at various times during her home ownership and said, hey, what's going on with the market? What should I be thinking about? What should I be considering refinancing or repositioning this property? So those are very valuable conversations. So I would encourage anyone is if you have a financial plan or if you have a mortgage officer or a great realtor or a great broker, you know, lean on those relationships to get the expertise you need so that you're able to buy and make timely purchases. But more importantly, you have the information to empower yourself to, as we're talking about, build legacies and wealth.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, most of our community's wealth is tied directly to real estate. You know, and there's an old, I shouldn't say it's an old, I mean, the fact that quote that Booker T. Washington made He said this about real estate. This is back in 1867. He said that the Negro should not be deprived by unfair means of the franchise. Political agitation alone will not help him. Back at the ballot, he must have property, industry, skill, intelligence, and character. No race can permanently succeed without these traits. And he says, whether he would admit it or not, a white man respects a black man who owns a two-story brick house. And this is back, again, in 1867. And he's saying that no matter if – and this is before, obviously, that Barack Obama became president. And he was able to see that even if we did have a black president, political agitation alone would not help our race improve without having real estate, without beginning to build wealth in addition to that. And so that's what the show is about, is getting people to realize that we're not just getting folks to go out here and invest in real estate just so you can make money. The higher purpose, the consciousness of it is so that you can understand that we're building wealth for our communities so that we can begin to pass down to our future generations the wealth that we're building. And that's how we need to be thinking, and that's what this show is designed to do. With the Conscious Roundtable, is designed to provide you not only with the knowledge, but provide you with the professionals, the resources, and the support to help you get there, the education on top of that, so that you can make informed buying decisions, as I like to say, data-driven buying decisions. And as long as you buy properties with a data-driven buying decision, you won't lose money. And I share with you all one of my stories real quick, is that I bought my first property as an investment property, and a guy offered me a deal that I had no real estate knowledge at all. I was totally inexperienced. I was in my 20s. I was making quite a bit of money, and I didn't have any children. So everyone kept telling me that I'm getting murdered in taxes, so either have some kids or buy some real estate. I decided I'd rather buy some real estate than have kids at that time of my life. And the guy sold me a house, didn't know what I was doing, didn't have the benefit of going to any home buying classes. This is prior to the internet, so I had no idea that what kind of research I needed to do. I just trusted a person who claimed to be a friend and a real estate professional. So long story short, he sold me the property, and I had pretty much every possible thing that can go wrong with the house. I didn't want to live in a house because, again, it was in a neighborhood where in D.C. that had not changed over yet. So it was still right smack in the heart of the hood where they had guys who were, you know, practicing their street pharmacy business. Huh. You know, it was a bad neighborhood in all essence. So I didn't want to live in it. But so I bought the house and instantaneously became a property owner and a landlord and had no experience, no training with either one of those. And so you can imagine that I made a mistake. I had to it took me 7 months to get someone in there to rent the property. I had no idea what it took to be a landlord, a property manager. I hired Sears back in the day. Sears was actually doing renovations, and you know, you can hire contractors from Sears. And I just went to the Yellow Pages and contacted Sears, as I knew them, and ended up paying a lot of money in maintenance. He did a horrible renovation on the property, so I had to bring up the code. But through all that, fortunately for me, this was back in 1998, and this is prior to the boom in D.C. So even though I lost money on the front end of the property because I made bad decisions and had a lack of knowledge and didn't have mentorship and the right real estate professionals guiding me, I eventually ended up making more money and doubled my money from that property because of the fact is the real estate market in D.C. boomed. And property, and now that house is worth, I paid $169 for the house. The house now is worth $745,000. And it's still a small house. And it was a small house when I brought it. You know, I remember when I looked at the closet space, you know, and Mr. Smith, you definitely know this, the closet wasn't even wide enough that you could even hang a suit in. Because the width of the hanger was wider than the closet, you know.
Yeah.
But I'll say all that, I share that story because it taught me a very valuable lesson when it comes to real estate, and that is time cures all wounds. So if you can persevere through the storm, You know, and sometimes in real estate, there are going to be periods where there is a storm. And what I mean with a storm, I mean where it's the market seems to have changed. You can't sell the house. You may be upside down in the property because the market, you know, there was a coronavirus that came out of nowhere and landlords can, you know, can't pay the mortgage and the bank stopped lending. And it creates an atmosphere like we're pretty much maybe going into now. But just hold on to that property. Don't sell when the market's low. That's what I tell folks. It's like stocks. The goal is not to buy high and sell low. It's to buy low and sell high. So if the market's not conducive for you to sell, don't sell. But there's always going to be someone who needs some place to stay. You'd always find someone who's interested in renting the property, or you can leverage it for other reasons, like I can rent an office out of it, or something other creative you can come up with to generate cash flow from it to help you persevere through those dark days to get to the point where the market changes again, and it will because it's a cycle, and then you can sell it on the back end. So I just wanted to share that, and I wanted to make sure that our listening audience understood. So we're getting to the top of the hour. We have pretty much 4 minutes left to go on the show. So now, Juma, I just want to give you an opportunity. Did you have any initial questions you may have for myself and Mr. Smith, or any last comments you want to give to our listening audience?
I just wanted to say I had no idea that I was going to end up being in the position that I'm in now. I had no idea. When I purchased my first home, I was just so excited and thought I would stay there forever. But it worked out for me that I was able to, I'm renting that, and I would love to keep going with this. As time moves on, you know, I want to keep going now. I've been bit.
Bit by the real estate bug.
Yes. And as a matter of fact, my daughter even said, don't sell that house. She said, don't sell it. She said, rent it out.
I know that's right.
I was like, really? Yes, rent it out. So I'm glad I listened. I'm glad.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mr. Smith, any final thoughts? Or you want to share your contact information with our listening audience?
Oh, sure. Yeah, absolutely. As I said, I'm here to serve. We are a socially conscious real estate company, helping buyers, helping sellers in residential as well as commercial investment properties. We're also developers, and we do property management. And so when you hire the Velocity Real Estate Group, you not only get someone that can represent you, integrity, but we're also active investors. So we're on the front lines and doing data analysis, finding the best deals. We have a team of contractors and developers and lenders that we work closely with. So you know, not only get us as a professional, but you get our full network. And so you can contact me at 240-317-9444. That's 240-317-9444. Or you can reach me on the web at the Velocity Group LLC.com. The Velocity Group LLC.com. And then, of course, you can email me, andre.yourrealtor@gmail.com.
Absolutely. And again, thank you, listening audience. This has been the King Street. And again, this is your host, King. And of course, the company I represent is Conscious Real Estate Investors Roundtable. We call it the Conscious Roundtable for short. Our website is ConsciousRT.com. That's ConsciousRT as in roundtable.com. And as we said before, we've been working on creating some real estate classes that we can provide for you online. Our website will reflect the times and dates of when those classes are going to start. So look for that on Monday. We're going to be launching that on Monday. You have access to our list of classes. And please continue to listen to the show. We're going to be providing great information and a new topic each week. And I look forward to building with everyone. And again, I'd like to implore everybody to please continue to practice the CDC suggested requirements for dealing with the coronavirus. And everybody continue to have a beautiful day, a blessed day. And let's all continue to be more conscious.
DC Metropolitan News and Real Estate Information.